Right. Well, that's something the Gemara discusses in Kedusha. The Gemara decides no, that a person that's an ani mitzvah v'yosa is not the schar is not as great as a mitzvah v'yosa. Like for instance, a guy could do all the mitzvahs in the Torah, except Talmud Torah in certain areas, that are not related to him, and also Shabbos. But otherwise, a guy could do all the mitzvahs. A guy can put on tzum. A guy could do mitzvahs lulav. A guy could do all the mitzvahs. But the guy, when the guy does it, he has a schar and ain't a mitzvah v'yosa. But we say that if a guy does the mitzvahs, he's not going to have the schar as a Yisrael that's a mitzvah v'yosa. It's a Gemara condition, but we conclude that an ain't a mitzvah v'yosa does not have the reward of a mitzvah v'yosa. Okay? So, and that's what the Gemara is basing itself on. So, that would answer that question. Why that is a separate story. Does anybody want to venture a reason why one would think you're right? I mean, on the surface, one would think just the opposite. You're an enemy of the Yosef, you do it, so you should get more spot. Okay? I will leave that question. Yeah?
Why would someone not in the Yosef get less spot?
Right.
Because when someone was told to do something, when someone's parent tells them to do something, there's always a feeling that you don't want to do what someone asks you to do. There's like a rebellious or something that you just don't want. You feel like you're like submitting to what to their will. But it's much easier to do it when you're not asked to do something. Because then like you're doing it on your own merit and you feel to yourself, you're more self-righteous. You're like, I'm doing it on my own free will, on my own terms, and I'm doing it. So that's why it's less fun.
Okay. So in other words, you're saying, because psychologically, it's harder to do something when you're commanded to do it.
Yeah.
Okay. But let me ask you a question. When a person does the mitzvahs in the Torah, so if a person does the mitzvah in the Torah on the highest level, so, and I mean the highest level like the Torah tells us. So what does the Torah say really? The Torah really gives a reason for keeping the mitzvahs. What does the Torah say in Dvarim? Why did God give us the mitzvahs? Yeah?
I don't know.
So let me suggest that you read Sefer Dvarim. It's an important Sefer. Okay? So Moshe Rabbeinu says, the Torah says, the reason is, Leman Yitav Loch Levanecha Adolam. Okay? Letov Loch. It says many, many times in Dvarim. Repeats that the Ramban emphasizes the fact that the Torah repeats this. But it's Pesukim in the Torah. You know, the Ramban, Pesukim in the Torah. That the purpose of the Torah, the reason why God gave the mitzvahs is for our benefit. Okay? So it would come out like this, it would come out a strange thing, that if you really understand the Torah on a very deep level, so then you understand that it's for your benefit. A person that doesn't understand doesn't know. A person that doesn't know medicine, so the doctor gives him a prescription, so he takes it because the doctor told him to take it. But if the person would have more knowledge of medicine, they'd understand, they see this is really something that's good for them. They'd understand how it works and why it works. Okay, then they wouldn't do it because the doctor told them to do it. They would do it, or a child takes medicine because the father says take medicine, right? The child really had a greater knowledge, a greater understanding, so the child would take the medicine because they'd understand that it's good for them, right? So it comes out like this, that if a person really understands the Torah properly, then why do they do it? They do it because it really is good for them. Because if they understand what the Torah says, so then it will come out that a person that understands the Torah is in a worse position than a person that doesn't understand the Torah. According to what you're saying. Because you're saying that when you're commanded to do something, so it's harder, right? So that means because you're doing it because your father tells you, right? But if you really understand the reason why your father told you, so then you're going to do it because that's the thing to do. So it'll come out the more knowledge, and then it's going to be easier. So why do you have to say, and ain't a mitzvah yosa? You're going to have the same problem with the mitzvah yosa. If the mitzvah yosa reaches a level where they really understand what God says, which is in the Torah, which is that the whole purpose of the mitzvahs is really to benefit you, and a person that is really a chacham understands the mitzvahs and understands that it's for his own benefit, so then it'll come out that such a person will get less schar than a person that has less knowledge. Isn't that a strange, will that be a strange thing, that the more knowledge you have, the worse off you are, and yet the Torah tells you that you should increase your knowledge? Wouldn't that be a contradiction? Okay. That's the problem with that. That's the problem with that answer. Any other suggestion? Okay, it's a good question. All right. Now, let's leave the question for a second. But let's understand there's another question you could ask over here. Okay, because the Gemara says that the reason, the Gemara says that why does she get this stay of execution, so to speak, is because of some kind of schar that she has. So the Gemara says, what kind of schar? If it's schar of Torah, so she's not a mitzvah v'yosef. Right? So Rashi says, so she can't have the schar of a mitzvah v'yosef. So there's another question you could ask here. What's the question? That's right. So very good. Excellent. Very good. That's good. Right? Right in the head. Who says that's not enough? Could be it's not as much as a mitzvah v'yosef. But how does the Gemara know that the fact that it's less means it's not enough? I mean, maybe that is enough. That's a very good question. Okay? Any suggestions? Okay. It's a high question. Yeah. The answer to that question is that, you see, you have to understand over here, there are two frameworks, and this will explain the other question, the answer to the other question too. There is a framework of Shmiras HaMitzvahs. The Shmiras HaMitzvahs, the mitzvahs that God gave us in the Torah, like the Torah says in Sefer Dvarim, is really for our benefit. Okay? And like the Ramban points out, you should look through the Ramban in Kansibar. Explains this at length. That God gains no benefit whatsoever from our doing mitzvahs. And all the tefillahs and all the shvachos that we say to God are really totally nonsensical insofar as God is concerned. But it's for our benefit. It's all for our benefit. But there are two responsibilities that a person has in Shemiras HaMitzvahs. One is for your benefit, for our benefit, okay? But there was a certain responsibility that you have that we received at Maimed Har Sinai, a bris. See, a bris is a little bit different. See, a bris is more than just the fact that the mitzvah, of course the mitzvah benefits you, but a bris means that you will mekabel the mitzvah. That you have a certain responsibility to do the mitzvah, not just for yourself, but in order that the system should exist in the world. Okay? And that really was v'atem tiyuli mamlachas kohanim v'goy kadosh. It means that the moment we accepted Torah at Sinai, we accepted it unconditionally, which means that a mitzvah, every mitzvah that we accept is a double, it has a double function. One responsibility to the mitzvah is for ourselves, for our own benefit, because it benefits us, you see. But there's another aspect, and that is another dimension to it. The other dimension is that we accept it upon ourselves a responsibility to keep the Torah so that the system should exist. We have responsibility to keep this system existing in the world. Okay, that's v'atem tiyuli mamlechas kohanim v'goy kadosh. It means for the entire world we have a responsibility to keep the system. So I'll give you an example, I mean, of a practical example, but of course it's not practical, it's only a theoretically practical example. The Rambam says in the Maror Nevuchim he says, of course the mitzvahs are all for our benefit. But let us say theoretically, okay, hypothetically, that there was a certain mitzvah that for a certain individual at a certain time it wouldn't be a benefit. And the Rambam says this is possible. Because after all, 613 mitzvahs, and you cannot say that in every single situation, in every single case, that it's always going to be a benefit, every single mitzvah in every single case. The Rambam says in the Maror Nevuchim, he says, that's virtually impossible. So he says, so there could be a time, there could be an instance, be rare, but there could be an instance that if a person really had total knowledge, that they would know that a specific individual in a specific time, that this mitzvah really wasn't for his benefit. Of course, we can't know that. As I said, it's hypothetical. But let's say, hypothetically, a person would be able to know that. Would they have to keep that mitzvah or not? What's the answer? Yes. Why? Because you must keep the mitzvahs. That you must keep the mitzvahs because you accepted a bris. There was something that we accepted at Sinai upon ourselves. And because of the Maimed Har Sinai, because of Bris Avos and Maimed Har Sinai, to do the mitzvahs, to keep the mitzvahs for ourselves and for future generations, and not to deviate. So a person that breaks a mitzvah really is breaking two things. First of all, they're losing the benefit for themselves. But even if they weren't, even if you would say, Lu Yitzur, let's say hypothetically there would be a case where a person really didn't lose a benefit. In such a case, possible, the Rambam says. Now, let's say you'd have such a case. You'd still be mechuyif to keep the mitzvah because you have a responsibility to keep the mitzvah forever because of the system, to maintain the system. So really, in Shmiras HaMitzvahs, there are two separate things. One thing is that the mitzvahs benefit us. There's no question. That's why God gave us the mitzvahs. But we don't have a right. We Jews don't have a right to just say, we'll take the benefit, and that's it. We accept it upon ourselves, yes, we'll take the benefit, but also we have a responsibility to keep the system of Torah regardless, so that this system should continue. That's what it means by Mitzvah V'yaseh. You see? Yes. Why it's important? The importance of the system continuing is because God's will is that every human being should have the ability to know what the good is. Every human being. Every Jew and every human being. And that's why when you read the Navi, so the Navi says, the Navi speaks many times, not just about Klal Yisrael, but about the entire world. Okay, you know very well that Yonah went to Nineveh. Okay? Nineveh was not a city of Jews, but he had a shlichus from God to go to Nineveh and to save the people of Nineveh. So you see that God, when God created man, so God's will was that every human being should have the opportunity to know what the good is, to know what the system is. So it's available. So we have responsibility. We accept it upon ourselves a responsibility for ourselves and also for the entire world, because that's God's will, that every human being should have that opportunity. So it's just, justice demands that we benefit from the Torah, but justice demands that we not just benefit ourselves, but we had to accept this responsibility. That was the bris. That was the bris of Sinai. Vatam tiyuli mamleches kohanim v'goy kadosh. That's what it means. That we are mamleches kohanim for God, which means to say that we fulfill God's will in the world. And we don't just take the mitzvahs for ourselves, but because we appreciate the fact that God gave us the mitzvahs, so justice demands that we have a responsibility to keep it for others, other Jews and succeeding generations, and also for the entire world. That's mamlechas kohanim v'goy kadosh. Mamlechas kohanim means they're kohanim. So who are the Yisraelim? I mean, and that pasuk, the rest of the world. It means every Jew, Kohen over there means one who is in the service of God. So the whole nation is Mamlechas Kohanim. So everybody else is, the whole rest of the world is viewed as Yisraelim. I mean, they're plain, they're not Kohanim. So that's justice. So it means to say that in accepting the Torah at Sinai, we didn't just accept it for ourselves, say, you know, we're going to take the benefits of the mitzvah, this is very nice, and the rest, right. No, it was a deal. It was a responsibility. And the responsibility is, yes, you can get the benefit, but you have a responsibility to keep it for others. And that's, justice demands that. And we bound ourselves by that obligation. That was the bris. That's the bris. And Moshe Rabbeinu repeated the bris. Atem Yitzav Mayam Kulchem, Fereshem Lekechem. Okay, they really were three. There really are three aspects to it. First of all, God gave us with Makabal on Sinai. Secondly, we accepted it b'shvur ba'Allah, which means that if we deviate, so then we're not under the natural law anymore, but there will be onesh. Okay, that's the second thing. And then Moshe Rabbeinu himself reestablished the bris. Okay, again in Var. So this bris is very important. So it means to say, what the Gemara means to say is that there's a different dimension to a mitzvah v'yosa. It's a completely different dimension. It means when a person that's a mitzvah v'yosa, so he's doing the mitzvahs in two frameworks. Of course, the mitzvahs are for our benefit. But he also is exercising a responsibility of justice. That he was accepted this bris, and we have to keep it regardless. Even if you would know, for instance, that a particular mitzvah, a particular person, at a particular time, wouldn't be of benefit, you'd still have to keep it. Okay? So that's a different kind of a dimension of Shmiras HaMitzvahs. So that's what the Gemara means. That's why that over here, the Gemara is mitzvah v'yosa. You see, if a person just does the mitzvah, if a person's a guy, for instance, a guy could do all the mitzvahs, like I told you, practically all the mitzvahs. So if a guy does a mitzvah, he's doing it because this mitzvah he realizes is going to benefit him, so he's doing the mitzvah to benefit himself. That is not the same thing as when we do it, because we are doing it because of an obligation and a responsibility towards the whole system. So the Gemara says over here that Noshim, insofar as Talmud Torah is concerned, insofar as learning Torah, a woman doesn't have that dimension. Because a woman also could learn and should learn. I mean, for her own knowledge and for her own perfection, a woman should learn just like a man. But she doesn't have the responsibility of the Mesorah. She doesn't have that responsibility. If she does it, she's doing it solely, completely, because it's her own benefit, her own gain. So the Gemara says that's a different dimension. Now, why isn't that enough over here? Why isn't that enough? So apparently, what the Gemara held is that the Isha Soto, who deviated from the way of the Torah, from the path of Torah, her Avera was really on two levels. One level was, insofar as she herself was concerned, she harmed herself. She did something wrong. She fell prey to an emotion of the moment and she deviated. She destroyed her family. She destroyed her own personal life. She did a terrible thing. But more than that, not only that, she really broke the whole fabric of Klal Yisrael. Because Mishpacha really is an entity. Mishpacha is an entity in the Torah, because that is the very unit, you see, upon which the whole system is built. The unit of Mishpacha. That's why you have the Yad Levincha. Okay, the Yad Levincha. So Mishpacha really is an entity that's the basic unit of the whole Klal. So when the woman deviated, she did two things. Insofar as she herself is concerned, she lost out, but she also caused harm to the whole society. You see, because she broke the very unit, the very entity upon which the whole society is built. So that's why the Gemara says that if it's Eina Mitzvah V'Yosa, would not be able to help her. Because over here, the correction has to be in the same framework as the deviation. Just like the damage was done on two levels, in terms of herself personally, and in terms of the klal, so therefore the correction must be done on two levels as well, both personally and also in terms of the klal. So that's what the Gemara says, that any mitzvah is not going to do the trick, it's not going to work, because that's only insofar as she herself is concerned, but she did more damage, so it's not equal. And the Gemara never says that would be enough. It's interesting, later the Gemara gives another teretz. And the Gemara says, we'll take a look at the Gemara later, we'll just jump down to the Gemara later, because it has to do with this. The Gemara wants to give another teretz. Ravina Omar, you see on the side it says Brachas Yizayin over there? On the very, on the margin it says Brachas Yizayin Amad Aleph, in brackets. You have that? On your right side? Okay, so now just move to the left and you'll see Ravina Omar. See? So the Gemara says, Ravina Omar, La'olam Zchus Torah. Really, Zchus Torah is what saves us. With the Ka'amrit Eina Mitzvah V'Yosa, and you're saying that she's not a Mitzvah V'Yosa. Nei, defekudi lo mifkidi. It's true that she is not machuya. She's not commanded to do it. But ba'agra de mekaryon umisnayim b'nayu, v'natron lohu l'guvrayu ad osam ube midrasha, mi lo palgon ba'dayu. So what does the Gemara say? The Gemara says no, but she has a certain schus. So take a look at Rashi. The Mikriyan and Misniyan, Shetarchas al Bnei'en, Lavion, Labes HaSefer. Because who usually takes the child, makes sure the child's ready to go to school in the morning? Who prepares you? So it's the mother. So Likro Mishnah, Velishnos Mishnah, Likro Mikro, Velishnos Mishnah. Vinatran Lagavayim, Abtinus Labalein, Shiyotzin Liracheres, Lumo Torah. And she sacrifices for her husband to be able to learn Torah because years ago, I mean, what they would do, a long time years ago, many times they had to leave their homes. So the wife would be willing to allow her husband to leave the family in order to learn Torah. So she gets tremendous schar for that. So you see, the Gemara answers that she also is contributing to the system, even though she's not. The Gemara's answer is really very good, because in terms of the chiyuv, she has no chiyuv. But the problem wasn't the chiyuv. The problem was because she's not benefiting, she's not paying back the system. She robbed the whole system and she's not paying it back. So the Gemara says, no. She also pays back the system. How? Not by learning herself. If she learns herself, it wouldn't help, because learning herself would be something she'd do for her own perfection. But insofar as the whole system of Talmud Torah, if it weren't for her, the system couldn't survive. Because you need to have the next generation, which she takes care of, and also the present generation. Her husband, she allows him to learn Torah. So that's a tremendous mesiras nefesh. And that would be the same thing today. Doesn't mean that the husband has to go to another city. That means many times a woman wants to go out at night. She wants to have a good time. But her husband is learning, so she learns. So she's giving up her own personal life in order that her husband should be able to learn. So that means that she's keeping the system going. So that's the Gemara's second parrot. So that since in that respect, she is really partakes of Talmud Torah, if she's such a woman, so then this would protect her. This would protect her. Okay? Yes?
But how is that good enough? That doesn't cover the second aspect. That doesn't cover the aspect of her benefit. I mean, that's, she's not doing something she's commanded. In part, she's, in one sense, she's doing the Mesorah. She's, by having the children do it, but she's not covering that it wasn't in two on her. So the second aspect doesn't apply to her. So it's only one aspect of benefit.
No, so that's what I'm talking about. If you're going to say because of the psychology of mitzvah, so your answer won't work, because over here she could say she's not mitzvah. She, a woman doesn't have to get married. I mean, she's not mechuyev to get married, not mechuyev to have a husband, not mechuyev to have children. But that's not the point. That's what I'm trying to prove to you, that the point isn't from the mitzvah aspect. The point is that she is not doing something which perfects not only herself, but the system. But of course, a woman like that is perfecting herself as well. I mean, that's a very high level person that she's willing to give up. I mean, from her own personal enjoyment, that's perfecting herself as well, certainly. But I mean, she doesn't engage in nonsense. She's not spending her energy in nonsensical things, and she's doing something of a higher level. So she perfects herself certainly, but not only herself. That wouldn't do the trick. Like I said before, she perfects the whole system, because without her, the system couldn't exist. So you see from the Gemara's very answer that our definition of mitzuviosa and ena mitzuviosa is not in terms of the individual, but the reason is over here that the mitzuviosa is operating in a different framework, a different dimension, and that's the dimension of the responsibility of the bris. And since the Gemara says even though she doesn't have to do that, but if she is such a person that did do that, so then it would protect her. Yes.
But does a person put this cost the first aspect of just maybe for the benefit of himself?
Yeah.
Then why do you want it? That cost still enough.
That's what I'm telling you. It has to be logical. See, you can't just say this is enough. It's not like you know what I mean. You just say that. Well, look, if you any amount, you have a little less, it'll also be good. Throw it in. I mean, it doesn't work that way. It has to be logical. And it has to be exactly commensurate, exactly equal to what she did in the way of harm. It must be logically correct. It must logically correct that situation. So therefore, you must have these two dimensions. If it doesn't, you can't just say, yeah, maybe she made a bracha on an apple. Maybe that'll save her. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, that's to make sense. Okay, so the framework has to make sense. It has to be equal to what the harm that she did. It must be something that undoes it, that counteracts it, which must be of equal proportion, in the same realms. You follow? That's the Gemara. Okay. All right, so let's go over it. Now the Gemara says like this. Gemara says, so the Gemara says, so therefore it can't be schus of Torah. At this point, the Gemara didn't have that other answer, which Gemara says later. I'm not going to go into why the Gemara did. Smach leikus, whether that would be enough. But anyways, the Gemara says like this. The Gemara says, Ella schus de mitzvah must be referring to the schus of mitzvahs, of doing mitzvahs. So the Gemara says, schus de mitzvah mi migna kula hai. Does the schus of mitzvah really help that much? Is the schus of mitzvah going to, is that such a big thing, the schus of mitzvah, that's going to save her from her onesh, from her punishment? So the Gemara says, Vatanya, now the Gemara goes off on a separate thing. So we have to go, let's just forget about the question for a moment. Let's just go through the material the Gemara presents. Vatanya, we say words like this. Ezu darsh Rabbi Menachem Bar Yossi. Menachem Bar Yossi darsh in this pasuk. The pasuk in Mishlei says, Ki ner mitzvah v'Torah or. So the mitzvah is like a ner, and Torah is like an or, like a big light. So the Gemara says, Tola kosvas a mitzvah b'ne'er v'sa Torah b'or. Es a mitzvah b'ne'er, why did it compare the mitzvah to a candle? Lomalach. Ma ne'er eina megina elifisha. just like a nair, a candle only helps out temporarily. Okay, it's limited the way it helps. I mean, only in a limited sphere where it shines and limited in time. It's kind of like a patchwork type of assistance, momentary, temporary. So that's why the Torah says mitzvah is considered like a candle. But the Torah ba'or, lo malach, to tell you, ma'or megin la'olam, aftor megin la'olam. Just like light, the or, a tremendous amount of light is something which is unlimited, okay, like daylight, for instance, okay, so that's unlimited. That's what Torah is like. So you see the difference between Torah and mitzvah. Tremendous difference. And there is like a little candle that's so limited, it just helps you in a given situation. You see, it's only if you saw. But when the sun shines and it's light, then it's like the whole world is bright. It's limitless. Yes?
You know, such thing that in sunlight, the light only goes for a specific distance, and it has its boundaries. I mean, it is dark in other places.
In the universe, you mean?
What?
In the universe? Yeah, I know. No, on the plane, yeah, but we're speaking about the person in that situation. There was a difference between, the Gemara is not interested in the physics of the thing. The Gemara is interested insofar as you, as a human being, partake of the benefit of it. So the Gemara says you can't compare the benefit of a candle with the benefit of light. I mean, the benefit of daylight is ubiquitous. It's everywhere. It's all over. It's limitless. Whereas the benefit of a candle is a limited thing, because it's dark all over, and it's only that little area, that limited area, that it really affects. Okay? It's not speaking about the physics of the thing, speaking about insofar as a human being benefits from it. Okay? Yeah.
The Gemara seems to be referring to the light as a candle, not in terms of its distance, but in terms of the fact that it's only temporary.
Yeah, temporary.
It's time to.
Both.
So what is the light that the Lord is referring to that doesn't have this same time constraint? I mean, the sun goes down. It has its own time constraint. Every light that we know of physically has a time constraint.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, that's why I say when the Gemara says that Lefisha, it's not really referring to time. It means Lefisha in the Gemara doesn't necessarily mean in terms of time. But Lefisha means that it's a limited kind of a thing. It's using an expression of Lefisha. It means it's a limited thing. It doesn't mean that it's not a matter of time. You could have a candle that will burn longer than the whole day. I mean, it's true. It's just using an expression. Yes?
Yeah, we say on Talmud Torah is made of Kulam, right?
Yeah.
And Talmud Torah is actually just, equal volumes added up. So if you just do like, I don't know, say, a big candle, it can be just an idea of a candle. How can you...
Are you saying that the Talmud Torah Mitzvah means literally if you add up all the mitzvahs on one side and the Talmud Torah on the other side,
it's
going to come out exactly equal?
Part of the mitzvah, Talmud Torah is a mitzvah itself.
Yes. Right, so therefore?
So why is it?
Oh, that's a good question. Right. Yeah, that's a good question. Question is, when it says mitzvah, Talmud Torah itself is a mitzvah.
Right.
Okay, Talmud Torah itself is a mitzvah. Okay, so what does the Gemara mean by mitzvah? Right? Okay. All right. So that has to be explained. That's a good question. All right. So what the Gemara really means like this. The Gemara means that in our system in the Torah, in our system of the Torah, there are two things, two separate ways that God gave us for perfection. One is called mitzvah. One is called Torah. What it means is like this: that in our system, really, you have at the center of the system is the Chachmei Yisrael. The Chachmei Yisrael means the people that are Talmidei Chachamim. Talmidei Chachamim means that they have knowledge of Torah. They have understanding. And then you have a large amount of people which are not Talmidei Chachamim, which are Amei Aretz. Okay? They're ignoramuses. Now, what does it mean they're ignoramuses? Does it mean that they don't that they don't keep the mitzvahs? No. Does it mean that the system of Torah is not for them? No. It just means that it's a different level of Kiyum HaMitzvah. Okay, it's a different level. Now, the system of Torah was worked out precisely in that way. The truth of the matter is that the greater a person has, the more knowledge a person has, the less they really need the mitzvahs. For instance, the Gemara says somebody that's terasel nasa, a person that's constantly involved, a tremendous, tremendous Talmud Chacham, is really potter from many mitzvahs. Okay? Why? Because the mitzvahs are a benefit, but this person is involved in the highest area. If a person had total knowledge, the mitzvahs wouldn't even be necessary. Okay? If a person, and you see in Chai Olam Haba, there are no mitzvahs. Okay? So the mitzvahs over here are a means to guide you to perfection. All right? Now, Torah is also a means. But in Torah, the vehicle of Torah, what the Gemara is saying is that the vehicle of Torah and the vehicle of mitzvahs are two different things. Okay? You have a person that doesn't have knowledge, goes to shul, he does mitzvahs, he comes home, he keeps Shabbos, he makes Kiddush, he goes to a shir, he also learns. In the time of Talmud Torah, learning the Gemara says the same Krishna in the morning, Krishna in the nighttime. Okay? He wasn't over any Averis. But he's not a Talmud Chacham. He's not moved by the Chachma of Torah. Doesn't have that Chachma. Doesn't have that knowledge. Okay? So the Gemara says, that's what the Gemara means by mitzvah, Torah sakosur, a mitzvah b'ne'er, that's a Torah ba'ar. It means to say that in the system you have these two different vehicles. One vehicle is the mitzvahs. That's what keeps, that perfects a person. Then there's another vehicle, and that's the Chachma of Torah itself, the knowledge of Torah itself. So what the Gemara is saying is like this, that there are two different, since there are two different vehicles, the Gemara says that in Mishlei, Shlomo HaMelech compares the two. And he says that mitzvah does help a person. Helps a person tremendously. Why? Because a person that has mitzvah has a direction in life. They don't just follow their crazy emotions. They don't get involved in just following any kind of nonsensical pursuits. Like, I mean, I have to give examples. Living in this society, you just have to put on the television, watch the news, and you see exactly what we're talking about, okay? So it means to say that people just follow their own emotions and just ruin their lives. They don't have any guidance. So mitzvah, even without Torah, even without Chachma, it gives a person a tremendous benefit. It gives them a guidance in life. It channels his emotions to the right area. He knows he has to go to shul on Shabbos, he has to go to shul in the morning, he has to keep Shabbos, he has to have, he eats a special suit on Shabbos, he learns a little bit. I mean, he does, it directs, he has all the lavin he has to avoid in the mitzvah seder. He has a constantly, the Gemara says every person is, any person that keeps the mitzvahs on, even on a basic level, is mole mitzvahs karima. Mitzvah like a pomegranate. It means, there are so many mitzvahs that the direction is always kept straight. So that's really a major function of the idea of mitzvah. But the Gemara says that is not the same thing as Torah. Torah is where the person really has knowledge. Knowledge and understanding and chachma. And they really understand everything. They understand the purpose of the mitzvahs. They understand how it works. They understand what they understand the psychology, the inner workings of the human mind. They understand how the Yetzer Hara works. They understand what the Yetzer Tov means. They understand what how to live. They have the whole system is open to them through Chochmah. So that's what the Gemara says. That you can't compare these two things. Because mitzvah keeps a person in track, so to speak. Keeps them in track, and they have a much better life than if they weren't in track. If they weren't in track, so then they would be living a type of life which is eventually will eventuate in a more painful type of existence, or a worse existence. More painful existence, a worse existence, an existence that's further away from God, or an existence that's further away from truth. So mitzvah keeps them in track. But Torah is a totally different thing. Torah is like a big light, okay? Like a big light, and it has a different kind of influence on the person. Okay? And that's why the Gemara says like this. The Gemara says, V'omer. And there's another pasuk that says in Mishlei that explains the benefit of Torah in greater detail. And it says like this. B'is halechacha tancha oscha. Okay? The pasuk is B'is halecha tancha oscha b'shachbacha tishmo alecha v'kitzel sahita sichacha. The Gemara breaks down. What does it mean? Three things. The pasuk breaks down the benefit of Torah into three components. Okay, it's interesting. The Gemara says, "Bis halechacha tancha oscha zeh olam hazeh." That when it says that the Torah will lead you, Okay? And when it says Tanakh, that it will give you a certain, that it will give you a certain way of life, so that is Olam Hazeh. That's this world. Okay? It will be beneficial to you in this world. So that's one. And the second thing is B'shach b'cha tishma alacha zu yom ha-misa. That's when a person dies. So it benefits a person during his life, benefits a person when he dies. And then it says the third thing is v'kitzosa hitasichecha lo'asid lavo. That means in the ultimate existence. In the ultimate existence, it will give you, hitasichecha means it will give you what to say, which means to say that it will give you your function. Okay, so that's what Torah does. Alright? So you see that Shlomo HaMelech broke down the benefits of Torah into three different components. Okay? Besal Lechacho, during your lifetime, when you die, and after your death. Of course, there's one question you should raise, or one question you should ask it. What's the question? Okay, right. That one is hard. You really should only have two things. Olam Hazeh, everybody knows. Olam Hazeh and Olam Habah. What is this three? Why did it break it down into three parts? Olam Hazeh, when you die. What is when you die? The moment you die, it's a momentary thing, okay? Person, there's no, one philosopher one time said, there's no such thing as dying. Either you're alive or you're dead. So it's a split second between life and death, okay? So what is the importance of that, okay? No, that's afterwards. That's like it's also. That's afterwards.
Are you talking about your children?
Your children?
Yes. When you die, you no longer like help them or guide them in the way
you help them towards people to death. That's not a bad idea, but really it seems to be for the person himself. For the person himself. Yes? Well, that's the last one. That's like it's also. Okay, so let's leave this question a second. Let's take the first one. Bisalechacha tanchasfa. Okay? So that bisalecha means when you're alive, it will give you a certain benefit. A certain benefit. So what does that mean? That means to say like this. That the benefit of Torah, and this is an important thing that people don't realize. It means the benefit of Torah, the first step is that it gives the person the best life over here. Forget about Olam Haba. Because it's not talked about. Vekitzosa hitasichecha is Olam Haba. So it means to say what the Gemara is saying is that Shlomo Melech said he broke it down to three things. Why? Because the first thing is, and this is the thing that people make the biggest mistake about, is they think that if you live a life of Torah that you're sacrificing. You're living a sacrificial life. Look at that person. He sacrificed so much. Sacrifice is impossible on Yahadus. Why? Because we maintain that it's good. If it's the good, it's not a sacrifice. So it's beneficial. So b'salechecho tanchoscho, the pasuk says, is that a person lives with Torah. So it means to say that this guides him. This gives him a whole different way of life, and in his very physical life, this life here is by far superior, better, more enjoyable, more beneficial in every possible way than a person that doesn't have Torah. And it's impossible to be otherwise. Okay, why? Because a person that has Torah means he has true knowledge. So he understands what a person is, what his needs are, what his true needs are, and he knows exactly how to organize his life in a way of chachma so that his life is most beneficial to him as an adam, as a person. So he has the most gratifying, the most satisfying kind of existence himself. And in every way he uses chachma, so he has better... He has better family relations. He has every aspect. He knows how to use chokhmah in terms of how much money he needs, how much time he should spend allotting to that need, how much time he should spend in chokhmas haTorah. He has a tremendous enjoyment of learning, which is greater than any enjoyment that a person can really have in the world. It's something which is always at his disposal. I mean, if a person will be able to have the, just imagine, I mean, I'm sure many of you at certain points may have gone to a movie and enjoyed the movie. Very enjoyable, okay? Imagine, as enjoyable as that is, if you would have something which would be a far greater enjoyment and something you could just turn on instantly at any moment. I mean, who wouldn't give anything for that? Like the greatest thing in the world. That's what a Talmid Chacham has available all the time. Because a Talmid Chacham loves Torah and is intrigued by Torah and enjoys Torah. So it's like a person has something that they can enjoy every moment. Every minute. You don't have to go anywhere. So a person wants to go on a ski trip. I don't know how many preparations you have to make until you get there and all the situations, and then the conditions aren't right, the snow isn't good this way and it's not good that way, and then you have to come back and all the you have to stay in all the difficulties. A person can have an enjoyment that's far greater than that, and just without moving can just enjoy it. How fortunate is such a person? The enjoyment that they have in a life is far greater, far superior to any enjoyment that a person can have that is an amharis, that is an ignoramus. Aside from that, the person understands life and knows exactly how to live. You see, people in this society make one mistake. They assume that for everything you need an expert. If you want to get your car fixed, you must have an expert. You want to learn how to use a computer? You have to gain knowledge. You have to go and you have to study computers. You want to become a doctor, you have to study medicine. You want to become a lawyer, you have to go to law school. Everything needs knowledge. Except one thing they maintain does not need knowledge. And that is life. Life itself. People in this society maintain that when it comes to life, you don't have to have any knowledge. Just follow whatever you feel like is right. And you're definitely going to succeed. That's what Yahadis tells us is absolutely false. Logically, it's impossible, and the Torah emphasizes the fact that it's absolutely false. It is the greatest falsehood that people follow. That people think that in every area you need knowledge, but this area, just follow along your emotions and you're going to be fine. How is that possible, that a thing that is just a means, let's say for a livelihood, which is just a means in life, requires so much preparation? But life itself doesn't require any thought at all. You see? That idea is the idea of a fool. Okay? So you're asking, but everybody thinks that way? That's exactly what the Torah tells us. That everybody is foolish. You cannot go by what everybody does. It is very possible that the whole world is making a very, very serious mistake. And when your mind tells you that they're wrong, you have to go according to your chachma and not according to what people do. Who was the first one that discovered that idea? Basically? Exactly. Avraham Avinu. That the whole world is on one side and he's on the other, but it doesn't influence him, the fact that everybody's on the other side. When he sees it doesn't make any sense, so then he knows he can't follow it. In the same manner, if you were in a society where they were practicing primitive medicine and you really knew that you had a pill that works to save yourself, you wouldn't hesitate for a second from taking that pill in order to help yourself, even though everybody would say that you're wrong. Because you'd know that you're right. So Yahadis demands that a person follows knowledge. That's b'shalechecho tanchecho. That means during this life, the benefit of Torah in this life is unbelievable. There is no comparison between the life of a person who has knowledge of Torah and a person who doesn't have knowledge of Torah. There's no comparison in terms of, first of all, practically, in terms of how the person enjoys life. Cannot compare it. The enjoyment of Talmid Chacham exceeds in a way that's indescribable. Okay, the amount of enjoyment that he has over the person who doesn't have Torah, that's number one. And also, he knows exactly how to live, because that's what Torah is. It teaches a person how to live. So a person has the knowledge of how to live, his whole life has to, by definition, be different, just like a person who would, if your car was stuck, you have two people. One person says, look, I think if you do this, maybe that'll help. And he knows nothing about a car. And you had a mechanic, an expert mechanic. Who would be the one that you would know, would trust, would be successful? Plus the person with the knowledge. The same thing is over here. That's b'salech chotan chosva. So without talking about Olam HaBo or anything, okay, what the Gemara says is that's what Shlomo Melech said. The first step is that during this lifetime, the person of Torah has a far better existence in a multidimensional way. Not just in one way, multidimensional. In terms of what he enjoys, his soul really, his essence really enjoys what he's doing to a greater degree than other enjoyments, because it really It's something which moves his soul, his very essence. And secondly, it gives him chachma and guidance in how to work out everything in his practical life, and also how to live and how to allocate in this existence time and effort for different things. What's important, what's not important, not to be fooled by just an illusion, you see? So in every way, a person of Torah has a better existence right here. Forget about Olam Haba. You see, Goyim Lahav, they'll always say, their thing is that everything they do because they want to go to heaven. That's their religion. They're the shallow religion. And in Yahadus and Torah, you don't do, there's no reason a person, if there was just this existence alone, a person would choose Torah. Because he'd be infinitely happier in this existence. You don't have to go any further. Okay? Yeah. Right. Right. That's correct. Okay, well, let's take playing ball. Okay? Okay. When you started to play ball, was it easy or was it hard? It was hard. So in other words, because first you're missing, you don't know how to hit the ball. So when do you really get the enjoyment? When did you get the enjoyment of playing ball? When you do good. It has to be a certain level of performance before the enjoyment kicks in, right? Right? Okay. Now, in playing ball, the enjoyment comes a little quicker. In learning Torah, it takes a little bit more effort because it's a much higher activity. So it's true that while now you may not really have the enjoyment, but the fact is the reason why you don't have the enjoyment is because you don't have enough expertise at it. Just like when a kid starts playing ball, so he throws the ball, tries to hit, he misses. Most of the time he's missing. Once in a while he's lucky, boom, he feels good, he hit the ball. So until he gets a certain level of expertise, right, it's not going to be enjoyable. The same is, they're looking to understand something. Okay. So a question, even though you don't know the answer, the question itself is something which is enjoyable. Because in a question, you see, whenever you have a question, that itself is enjoyable. So I asked the question before everybody's looking at trying to think of an answer, right? So you see that a question is an enjoyable thing, because in a question you see that what you thought you understood, you don't understand. So even a question is progress in knowledge. In other words, whenever you have a question, you see that your premises that were before are false. So you gained a step in knowledge. So if you enjoy knowledge, every step is a gain. And every step is, and there's no misses. So from that standpoint alone, from those two factors alone, you see, you can see why learning is infinitely more enjoyable than, I don't care what game you play. Okay? First of all, in terms of accessibility, all right? In terms of accessibility. And secondly, you don't need any preparation, you can do any time, any moment. And secondly, every step in the process is enjoyable. It's always a home run, every time. Every time you think, you're always gaining, because you enjoy knowledge, so you enjoy every advance. And a question is nothing more than an advance in knowledge, because a question is telling you, hey, you thought you knew this before? Oh, there's something different over here, you see? So from those two points alone, you can see why learning is such an unbelievable enjoyment. But there are other reasons as well. There are other reasons as well. A person that enjoys learning, a person that is intrigued by learning, is a person that is drawn, okay? There's a certain quantity, a certain quantity gives a different quality. You know, like, taste it over there, taste it, take a look at this taste. Zeh tam hachacham. See taste over there? Zeh tam hachacham. Now take a look at that. I'm not going to go through his question because it's based on the Gemara, but take a look at his answer. The Yesh Lomar, Stam Talmud Chacham, an ordinary Talmud Chacham, Torasa Nasa. His learning is like his is like his preoccupation, his work. Va'osek ba umaharer kol shah. See, he's always thinking about it. Ve'ina holech dalar amos below Torah. So it means to say that a person who is once chachma, a person is involved in chachma, it's something which draws the person, and he's constantly involved in it. Okay? Because it's something, it's not something that he has to force. See, something you force yourself, you can only do at a certain time. You can't always force yourself to be involved in something. But Torah, all of a sudden, when a person reaches a certain level of Torah, it takes over, and he doesn't even have to try to do it. It just draws him, because as soon as he stops doing what he's doing, he starts thinking about these interesting things, these interesting topics, interesting areas, and his mind just goes by itself. Okay? So there is nothing that he has to do, you see, to involve himself in the activity. And it's something which is a constant. So the fact that it is a constant multiplies the intensity of the activity to a greater degree. It's intense in terms of what it is, and it's intense in terms of the fact that it's always consuming it. Okay? Now, a pleasure, you have to measure by the intensity of the thing. Okay? Anything else you do is only going to be intense momentarily. If you're going skiing, you're not going to be intense going up the trail, going up on the lift, right? There's only a moment of intensity, correct? In learning, the intensity is something which draws the person and is a constant. So therefore, a person that enjoys learning is far in a far, far superior position, far, far greater position in terms of enjoyment than a person that enjoys skiing. It's just physically, it's just impossible to be otherwise. Okay? This is an example of a dimension. I mean, I can go through many different points if you want to. Maybe one day I'll give a special share on that, on all the dimensions of why learning is more enjoyable. But I think you could see, just from the couple of things that I mentioned, that why a person who enjoys learning is in a far better position in terms of enjoying life than any other individual. I mean, just by the access alone. I mean, the access alone should be enough to show you the difference. And the fact that the person is drawn by it at all times is a certain level of involvement, indicates a certain level. A person is enjoyed by skiing at all times. I mean, you can't, it's just, you know, something which one time, okay. So the next day he's tired of it. He can't, whatever it is. He has to take a break, do something different. So you see that it's not capable of such an intense type of involvement, whereas learning is something which is capable for a human being of total intensity. And the intensity is what gives a person the quality of the enjoyment. Okay? Yes. And that's exactly right. In the beginning, you have to, just like when you're starting to play baseball, you're going to have to force yourself to keep on trying until you get to a certain level, or I don't care what sport it may be. In the beginning, it's always going to be difficult, and you really have to force yourself through the beginning, but the only reason you do it is because your eye is on the future. Otherwise, you wouldn't do it. The numbers are standing there, you know, trying to the ball and keep them missing all the time. So the only reason is because you know that, or you want to play, a person plays golf. So at first it's very difficult. But he only does it because he sees the other person started like this, and look at them now, I want to be like that. So your eye is always on the future. Same thing over here learning. In order to be a Talmid Chacham, your eye can't be on today. It has to be on the future. So it's true, you have to go through a difficult time, but you have to keep your eye, just like over there, you see a guy playing golf, say, wow, look at that swing, look at that guy, look at that ball go, I wish I could do that, right? So you have to realize that takes a lot of time and effort, okay? But realize the enjoyment that he has, that momentary enjoyment, is just momentary. Over here, you can have enjoyment all the time. So therefore, it's worth it. To go through, very well worth it to go through the difficulty, even though it may be a little more difficult than the playing ball, but the reward is so much greater that it's worth that additional effort. Okay, so that's why a chacham ain't of barosha. What does it mean a chacham ain't of barosha? It means a chacham knows the future. A chacham can't predict the future. I mean, everybody, only a navi can predict the future, but it means a chacham is one who looks at what the future benefit is going to bring. He can predict that if he sits and learns, he's going to be able to reach that level. And he sees that people have achieved that level. So he'd be a fool not to do it. In that sense, a chacham can know the future. Can't know the particular future. Doesn't know if it's going to rain tomorrow, But he knows that if he does this, he's going to get there. And it's well worth it to be there. Okay? So his eye is on that future state. That's a chacham in a barash. So that's this alecha chotancha. That in this life, if you forget about Olam Haba, just right here and now, is the biggest reason for a person to learn, for a person to be involved in Torah. And you see in Chamisha Chumshi Torah, so it never mentions really openly. It mentions through Torah Shema Peh, through Remes, but openly it doesn't mention anything about Olam Haba in our Torah, in Chamisha Chumshi Torah. Why? Because it's not even necessary. Not even necessary. Just for this life alone, okay, a person should know that he has the greatest life right here if he follows the Derech HaTorah, follows the way of Torah. And in an unbelievably better way if he follows the Chachmas HaTorah. Like the difference between a candle and between broad daylight. That's the difference. Okay? If he follows the mitzvahs, okay. It's a benefit. But the Chachmas HaTorah, like broad daylight. That's what the Gemara means. And when you understand it, and you see how true it is, based upon understanding and knowledge, you see it cannot be any other way. So that's Mishalecha Tanchasa. Okay? The next step is the questionable one. It says when you die. B'shach b'cha tishmarach. When a person dies, it'll protect you. So how does the Torah protect a person when he dies? Okay? What does it mean? Okay? Yes?
Yeah, normally death, if you have something like scary and people, and like for a non-Jew or someone in the Torah, death's envy. Like when they die, that's it. There's no point. As a Jew and someone who studies Torah, they're dying, but they're dying with something. Torah follows them, so it's going to protect them. And you're not dying; and it's not an empty death. There's no point.
Okay, that's good. I'll elaborate a little bit. Good. You see, it's an interesting thing, but the most people are caught in a very big problem. I'll tell you what the problem is. The problem is life and death. Why? Because if you would imagine the best life for yourself, which is what everybody wants, right? So then the better the life is, the worse the death is going to be. Doesn't it stand to reason? So it comes out that you can't win. Because if your life isn't that great, so you say, okay, might as well die. I don't mind dying. I'm glad. People say, I'm glad it's only 70 years. That's it. You know, sometimes people get upset with life. They say, life is short. It's a good thing it's short. That's it. So when things are miserable, people don't seem to mind death too much. But at least they say it that way. But I'm not so sure if they were facing it, they'd still say that. But they say it. Okay. But if you would imagine that life would be so great, so ultimately, you're going to have to face the most horrible thing, which is death, because look how great life is. So there's no way out. I mean, basically, it's a logical contradiction. So where are you working yourself? Okay? And if you think death is the moment of death, you're making a mistake. Because man has the ability to think ahead. He's different than an animal. An animal never worries about his death, because it doesn't even know it exists. Okay? It just instinctually functions and has an instinct of survival. But a human being has a mind. And the mind sometimes brings before its eye things that it doesn't want to think about. All right? So death is really an ongoing thing. Because everybody knows that they're going to die. So it comes out that and everybody's afraid of death. So it comes out that the better your life is, the more you're going to think about how bad the death is going to be. So you're caught. Right? So you're caught in a logical contradiction. I don't care who it is, you can't get out of this contradiction. The better your life is going to be, the more you're not going to want to die. You're not going to want to die, you know you're going to die, so that has to give you pain, the fact that you know you're going to die. So you can't win, right? That's what this pasuk is telling you. B'shach b'cha tishmor lach. With Torah, it's different. With Torah, it's telling you. With Torah, death is not a problem. Not only do you live a better life, but this problem that you have with death is gone. How is that possible? Right? Sounds like it's logically impossible. No, it is possible. I'll tell you why. Because the life of a person without Torah is just the instinctual life. That's their life. Life is instinctual. Parties, enjoyment, physical enjoyments, okay, eating, drinking, sex, whatever it might be, it's always a physical instinctual pleasure. That's what draws the world, okay? That's the whole world. Okay. Now that, when you die, is gone. And the person knows he's gone, and the person gets older, they see they don't have the ability they had before. Okay, now you guys are young, but if you have Chachamein of Barosha, you know, just like you're young now, you have to realize you're going to be in several years in a state where the body declines, your body's going to decline, you start losing, you know, the abilities that you had, the degree, you know, and the energies and the in terms of the physical that you had before. So it's a declining process, okay? So therefore, it has to bother the person. And that's why you see today, people just, they don't want to face the fact that they're getting older. So they try all kinds of operations and things and, you know, cosmetic surgery and all this type of thing. Why? Because they don't want to accept this fact. They want to deny it. So therefore, they have to constantly be doing these things. That has to be painful. It has to be. Yeah, it's not a happy thing, it's a painful thing. So therefore, you're caught in the contradiction. But a person of Chochmah, a person of Torah, is not interested. Their interests, their energies don't lie in their selves. In other words, in thinking about themselves. The energies really is thinking about a whole world out there that's far greater than themselves. They're interested in the question in Tesis. They're interested in this far over here. What does this Pasuk mean? They're interested, the energy is outward, you see? Whereas the energy of the regular, average person in our society is inward, okay? What am I? How much respect do I command? How much money do I have? What's my self-worth? How am I doing physically? How am I enjoying myself? All the mind is preoccupied with the self, because that's the whole world of the instinctual, correct? But a person that's a chacham is interested in things outside of themselves. And that's not only chachmas Torah, it's a chachmas Hashem. You know, when you see a scientist, so there's a bracha you have to make. Shenasim echachmas on the bas of Adam. Okay? Tam chacham shecholak mechachmas on the Yireel. But you see that we say Hameyel la'oretz marab masechot Hashem kulub chachmas Yitzo. Right? So this is true of all chachmas Hashem. Right? Now a person who is interested in things outside of themselves, so number one, the concern is not about the self. Death is something that happens to the self. So a person, the more preoccupied a person is with themselves, the more preoccupied they have to be with their death, because they have to know that if it's a self, yeah, but the self's going to get old, the self's going to be gone. So therefore, they're always caught in that, and they're always caught in that trap, and there's no way to get out of it. There's only one way out. The way out is for the person to be interested in things outside of themselves, in ideas, in Chachmas Hashem. Then the person is away from the concern about themselves. So there's several biographies on Albert Einstein, and people who saw him before he died, they said he knew. He asked the doctor, he said, "How much longer do I have?" The doctor said, "Well, could be 15 minutes, it could be a day." He said, okay. He took out his pencil and just kept going and kept writing his equations. You see? Why? Because he wasn't concerned. The concern was not about the self. The concern was about ideas in the universe, about Chachma. Ravan Kutlazatzel, when he was dying, so he was partially unconscious already. He was saying over one of his shiurim, one of his favorite shiurim, Bav Metzia. Okay? His mind was always involved in ideas, in thoughts, in chachma. The person that's involved in chachma, you see, is not involved with the self. So they're enjoying life because the ideas are so enjoyable, but it has nothing to do with the self, so they're not caught, you see. They're not caught in that trap, which is inescapable. Either you're enjoying yourself, and then you know you're going to die. Or else you think of death, and you can't enjoy yourself. So you're caught. The person who's involved in Chochmah is away from this. You see. So therefore, B'shach b'cho atishmo alecha, so therefore, it gives the person tremendous enjoyment, and it takes them away from that impossible situation where the better life is, the more you're going to think about it, you're going to die, and there's no possible way to enjoy life. On the contrary, the answer that the Torah gives to this is, if your enjoyments are outside of yourself, then you enjoy yourself tremendously. And in terms of the self, you're not even thinking about yourself, because that's not important. So b'shach b'cha tishmor alecha is the only solution. the only solution to the dilemma that the person who is interested in the self and in the sensual cannot get out of. It's virtually impossible. You see, because there's a tension between these two poles, the pole of life and the pole of death, and there's no way to escape it. There's only one way. B'shach b'cha tishmor lecha. And that is a person of Torah. And secondly, I would add what you mentioned before, that the person of Torah, you see, this is something which is extremely important. The person of Torah, through living this way, recognizes that the soul of man is really satisfied by God's ideas, by the Chachmas Hashem. He recognizes this, you see, and he knows, he senses, he doesn't know what Olam Haba is. No one can know what Olam Haba is. But he can sense that there is a type of existence that is tied to the way he has lived all his life, and that the soul can continue to perceive Chachmas Hashem. So death isn't something that frightens him, because he has already sensed the kind of existence that can go on, that he can sense can go on, you see. Whereas the instinctual life, everybody knows that you're not going to play golf without hands. You're not going to play golf if the body's gone, okay? You need a nervous system. You need the physical. So the person who has lived a life of Chachma, his soul has already experienced a kind of experience which he knows is not tied to the self, not tied to the physical, to the instinctual. It's a different world, and he can perceive, on the contrary, he can perceive a kind of existence that is not in line with the physical, with the body. So therefore, death doesn't frighten him. So therefore, again, on several dimensions, first of all, he's not involved with himself, and secondly, even though a person has to think about themselves sometimes, he can't say, never think about himself, the idea that this is the end is not so for the Tamachal. Because he's experienced a world which he knows that kind of a world can go on in the future. You see. So therefore, therefore death is not something which is, you see, which is frightening. There's a third dimension also. Most people before they die have regrets, because a person, when they follow the instinctual part of their nature, they're always going to make mistakes. I should have done this, I should have done that, because one instinct pulls you at one time and you run, and then another one gets you at another time. And since you're under the sway of these forces, it's impossible that at some point you're going to say, hey, you know, what did I do? So I often mention the story where my friend Rabbi Guggenheim was visiting a very wealthy man. And before he died, he was at that time the wealthiest real estate person in the world, I think it was. And he said, "Look," he said, "you know," he says, "what could all my money do me at this point? Can it help me?" So he recognized that the fact that he accumulated so much money, really, there was no sense to it beyond a certain point. You know, there's only a certain amount of money a person could use. But then he got caught up in an instinctual desire which was senseless. But before he died, he realized, he felt sorry. What did I do? What was the purpose of it? So that's why Chazal say that before a person dies, there's a certain insight, because there's a certain reality that hits him. So for the Talmud Chacham, that moment is a very good moment, because the Talmud Chacham thinks back and reflects on his life. He thinks he's very satisfied and very happy that he guided himself in the right way, and that he didn't waste his time doing this and doing other things which at this point would have no value. You see? Whereas the person who's involved in the instinctual at that moment has to realize that they made serious mistakes. They put their efforts and their energies into things which at this moment have really very little value. So, b'shach b'cha tishmor lecha is really, again, multidimensional in terms of in three frameworks. First of all, it takes the person away from the concern about the self to a tremendous, tremendous degree. And the second thing is that the person perceives that the kind of existence that can go on is not limited by this physical world. And third, the person, in reflecting on their life, realizes that all the things that they did up to this point are really good now. They're very happy. They're not going to think at that point, hey, I should have made more money. I should have done this. I should have had more tithes. That's not something a person thinks about before they die. It's exactly the opposite. I think all these tithes I ran after, what good is it now? Okay? So the person doesn't have the regrets. On the contrary, they face death with a certain happiness. That's what Chazal say, that that mace, if a person is happy at the time of their departure from this world, is a very good symbol. It's a good symbol. Because it could be that that really stems from an inner recognition of truth and the person being a tamachal. Okay? So that's the second, that's why you have the second, that's the second dimension. Okay, I think I see you have a lot of questions. Here you go.
If man is constantly preoccupied with his death, then that seems to be another issue in his life. So why isn't the Misa of the Shakta from Ishmael Lepa, why isn't that considered in the part that, you know, the Misa Lepa is like Osa, why isn't that considered the part that deals with all of my death? Because your preoccupation with death is part of your all of my death. Like
that's correct.
Anything that you...
That's correct. You're right, it's part of Olam Hazeh, but it's broken up into two components because they're two different concepts. They're two different things. Whereas one thing is how you function in this world, okay, and then there is the idea that you're going to die. So that, even though they're both true, it's not broken up by the time frame, it's broken up by the concept. And it's two different concepts. First of all, there's this life which you have to do, X, Y, Z, whatever, you know. That's certain activities. And then there is the idea that no matter what that is, but now there's another element that you're going to die. And that's a different aspect of life. So the way Shlomo HaMelech broke it up was in terms of two different areas of life. One is the area of life itself, and the other is the recognition that a person is going to die. Okay? Not true. That's not true. Well, first of all, that's not true. First of all, I don't believe that so. I believe that every person, I don't think a person goes through a day without thinking about their death. I don't think it's possible. Because unless a person is such a fool, that they just, they're drunk or something, and even people that do that, even people that engage in drugs and alcohol and things like that, one of the main reasons is to get away from the idea that they're going to die. That's the Navi says that. That the person gets involved in Echol Sheki Machanomos is really an attempt to deny the Machanomos. In other words, it's to be involved in an endless banquet to avoid the idea that a person is going to die. I don't think it's true that a person does not think about death. It's virtually impossible. If you take a look at it, if a person just watches the news, you see this one got killed, that one died, accidents, and you know that there are diseases, and every day a person is aware of the fact that their existence is a tenuous one. They may not want to put a lot of energy into thinking about it, but they know about it. They're aware of it. The awareness is something that a person cannot escape. Okay? But the pasuk really is essentially not talking about that part of life. It's talking about b'shach b'cha tishma alecha, when the real time of death approaches. I just extended it. I said that happens to be a true thing because a person can never really escape the idea of death. But the pasuk is essentially talking about the real death, when a person really approaches death. Okay? That's really what the pasuk is talking about. But I mentioned that in an extended form, that exists throughout our life. But the pasuk is the main concentration of the pasuk is at the time of death itself. But I want to show it's not just limited to that. It really is something that comes up all the time. Okay? Yes?
Is there an idea
When you're young, you believe you're immortal. Doesn't really mean that if you ask the person when he's young, are you immortal? He'll say yes. I don't think anybody would say that. It means to say that when you're young, you can channel more energy towards that illusion. But as you get older, and you see reality, especially the person sees when they get older, they see their body starts to deteriorate. So then, of course, you can't channel that much energy into that area. But I don't think at any point, unless a person isn't well, I don't think at any point, if you ask a person, I don't think he can care if he's 17, 18 years old, say, "You are mortal," and he says, "Yes," I think he has a serious problem. So there is a part of the person that always recognizes that they're mortal. Okay? But the question is how much energy you channel into that idea. And you can channel away. But don't forget, whenever you channel away energy, it's also a painful process because you have to deflect the energy. It means there's something you don't want to see. So there's a conflict going on. The conflict is always pain. You can't have a conflict without pain. So even a person that's very young and can sort of like forget about it for a while, but the fact is they know it's so and they have to, you know, avoid the idea, which means that there is a certain conflict going on inside. Of conflict is always a tension. Tension is always a painful thing. So no one gets away from that at any point, unless the person really thinks that they're immortal, in which case they would not be mentally, I wouldn't say they'd be well, yes. That's true. Well, you're right, but that's like telling a person, you know, if a person is about to have a serious operation, say, why worry? You know, I mean, it's very nice to say why worry, but the fact is that a person doesn't worry for logical reasons. In other words, a person will never say, you know, okay, I think it's logical for me to worry now. I think I'm going to worry. That's not the way worry works. Worry works not because you do it intentionally or logically. Worry works because whenever a person sees pain coming up, so it has a certain effect on them. And whenever a person sees pleasure, just like if a person sees pleasure, you can't have one without the other. In other words, if you found out that you're going to make $1 million next week, so then you'd be looking forward to that, right? And if you find out that if a person, God forbid, finds out he's going to die next week, so you can't say don't worry. I mean, that's the way life is. Life is that where there's something that you think is good, your emotions flow towards it. And something is bad, your emotions recoil and it gives you an inner pain. Okay? But you don't worry because you want to worry or because there's any purpose in worrying. That's why I always say it's useless to tell a person that's worrying, what are you worrying for? It's not going to help you. That's not why they're worrying, because they think it's going to help them. They're worrying because the pain of the situation is gripping them, because they see an oncoming pain. And a person has a way of anticipating. Just like you can anticipate pleasure, you see, if you wouldn't worry, you'd never be happy either. Okay? Because why are you happy? Because you're anticipating pleasure. Right? The person, when you feel, hey, I'm going to go out tonight, have a good time, right? So that's an anticipation. So when something bad's going to happen, you're going to anticipate it also. You can't say, hey, I'm only going to anticipate pleasures. I'm not going to anticipate pain. Oh, that would be nice. You could do that. But the mind doesn't work that way. So really, worry, when I say worry, and what I mean is the anticipation of pain. And if you can't anticipate pain, you can't anticipate pleasure either. So therefore, that again, you're caught in that impossible thing. Because everybody wants to anticipate pleasure, right? Otherwise, they'd be miserable. So you have the mechanism of anticipation. So it has to work for both. It can't work for one. It would be nice if it could, but that's not the way. That's not the way the mind. There's no switch that you can turn it off when you don't want it. Okay. 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 And then the last thing is the last part of the pasuk is vekitzoso hitasichecho la'asim lavo. All right. The last part of the pasuk is really the greatest part, and that is what the Rambam talks about in his Pirush Mishnayos. And that is that really, you know, everything is perspective. And what the Torah tells us is that we, in this existence, we only have a very limited perspective of what the soul really is. That the soul is something which is far deeper, far greater than the little bit of knowledge we have of it in this existence. And the Rambam explains, the Rambam says in the Pirush Mishnayos, when a person is mature, okay, and a person is, he says, let's say for instance a king, if a king looks back at the pleasures that he has as a child, and if he really is successful, and the moment when he's really happy as a king, at that moment he looks at the pleasures of his childhood as nothing, compared to what, but see, he didn't really have any knowledge. There was no depth to the pleasure that he had as a child. He says, in the same way, when the soul is in Olam HaBa, it looks back at all the pleasures of this world, it looks like nothing to it. Because that's the pleasure is so superior, so far superior. Because, you see, the thing is that every animal, in the animal kingdom you can see, that the higher animal has a higher capacity for pleasure. Okay? So, you could say, for instance, I know we have to make tests, but we could assume that a cow would have a greater sense of pleasure than an ant. Even though, this thing is an assumption. And certainly we know that a human being is capable of greater pleasure than a cow. A cow, you see, okay, it's content, but how much? Yeah. But a person, a human being, can really get excited. There can be a certain intensity. So the higher the level of existence, the higher the capacity for enjoyment. So what the Rambam explains is that the soul in this life is limited because of its bond with the guf. So its function is limited and its capacity for pleasure is limited. But in Olam Haba, the soul exists unhampered in its full existence. And in that existence, he says, there is an attending enjoyment that no one could ever even imagine here. So our perspective of the soul, you see, from this viewpoint is very minimal. You only get a small glimpse of what it is. Okay, sometimes when a person is involved in ideas and thoughts, he gets a glimpse of what the soul is. But the enjoyment of what the soul experiences per se, that is not in this world. That's only in Olam Haba. And that enjoyment is so much greater, so much superior to the enjoyment that you have here, that the Rambam says if a person were over there, he'd look back at this pleasure and he wouldn't even want them. Wouldn't even be interested in that because he's in so much of a superior state. It's just like over here when a person is in a very enjoyable state, and you tell him speak about a little enjoyment, then it means nothing to him. Okay, but if you have nothing better, okay, so then you take whatever you have. See, but so that's the last part of the pasuk. Vakitzosa he to sichecho means that the benefit of Torah in the next world is really the greatest of all benefits. The only thing is that we can't know what it's like because we are limited, because the soul is limited by the physical in this existence, because it's tied to the physical. And the way that connection exists, it doesn't have a full view of it. But in truth, the soul, when it exists after it departs, exists in a way that is so great in terms of its enjoyment that all the enjoyments of this world will be nothing. Before it, if it were placed before it at that time. So that's the last part of the pasuk. So what the pasuk does, in these three phrases really, what the pasuk does, it sums up the benefits of Torah on all scores. In terms of this world, how much greater the person's life is here, in many ways, like we spoke about before. Then it takes him out of the dilemma of the death-life conflict, which is impossible to escape, and on the contrary, again, in many ways, it removes that problem, okay, multidimensional. And ultimately, the ultimate existence is, of course, the greatest superiority. So that pasuk really shows you what Torah is like and what the benefits of Torah are, you see, which again gets back to your question, why it's worth it, even though it's difficult, to go through those steps because of all these benefits that you can only have from the life of Torah, you can't have from anything else. You see, so it really is worth it. Maybe a little harder than playing ball, but the ultimate gain is so multidimensional and so and the magnitude is so great that it is worth the effort. It is worth the effort. Okay, all right, we'll stop there. Yeah. Oh, any questions? Any questions? Yeah, sure. Okay. You can ask any questions. It doesn't have to be tied to what we discussed there. Yes. Right. Yeah. Goy Kadosh has to be Umos Olam because Kadosh means separate. Separate means that you are completely distinct, unique. So there must be something else there that you need unique from. You can't be Kadosh by yourself. The rest of the nations. No. I'm sorry. No. I said. Amamlechas Kohanim V'Goy Kadosh refers to the Jews vis-a-vis Umos Olam. You understand? In other words, it refers to the existence and to the benefit of Klal Yisrael as opposed, it takes into consideration Umos Olam. Okay, you know what I mean? Okay. No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry if I expressed that a minute. Yes?
Yeah, I'm pushed on me before that the person that looks like do not have a purpose or something that he looks like they could do it.
If such a thing would be possible, yes.
Right.
Yes.
So why, I don't know much of it, because somebody's already told us that would look like also the Mr. Parkman was from that case.
That's correct.
And he has to be, so why would he still have to be the Mr. Parkman? I'm told it's crazy not to be the Mr. Parkman.
No, no, you're right. All the sake of the mitzvah, put them in a mitzvah, he doesn't have to do the mitzvah.
But it doesn't apply if you're in the Torah.
It applies if a person is Torah-so un-naso. If the person is constantly learning Torah, then it applies. But if a person isn't constantly learning Torah, so then it doesn't apply, because we say, learn Torah in your own time. In other words, you can't say, you know, I learn an hour a day. Okay, so just when I'm supposed to daven, now's my time to learn. You know? You say, learn in your own time. You know, but if a person really is learning constantly, around the clock, he's putter from davening. Don't have to daven. Okay? You must have read a nasi daven once a month. Not for you. But it means he's constantly involved. Every minute he was involved in Chachmas HaTorah. So he wasn't mechayev to. The only thing he had to take a break was for Krishna. But first pass Krishna. But otherwise, you're putter. But the reason why you're not putter, why Talmud Torah doesn't work that way, is because you can learn on your own time. You can do both. You know what I mean?
But you can only do one.
The only time you say that's not possible, unless there is a case where that's true, and that's where you have Talmud Torah Barabbim. That where a person is learning Barabbim or is giving a shiur, it's the same thing like Taras El Nasa, that he's putter from mitzvahs at that time. Because of the fact that you can't duplicate the situation because you can't get the people together, then it would work even if it's not the Rosh Hashanah. That's the only case. Otherwise, you say do the mitzvah and learn later. Why can't you learn? There's no reason why the person can't learn later. There's more. How's it possible? In other words, if the person isn't a Rosh Hashanah, right? So the person learns 3 hours a day, so he can learn now. He can do the mitzvah now and learn later. And then he'll tell me that he doesn't have 3 hours later, so let him learn 6 hours tomorrow. I mean, you can always make up the time. It's not possible. The only time it's not possible is where you have a group of people where it's Torah Barabbim. Talmud Torah Barabbim has the same status as Taras HaMasa. A person had to give a shiur, and there was a Rabbim in front of him, and he had a davening, he'd be putter from davening, till after the shiur. Because you can't get the Rabbim in there. It'd be just like Taras HaMasa. Yes? Yeah, that's right. The only thing I had to do is say Shema. Yeah. Shema you had to say. Yeah. That's a good question. But the Shema is different. Because that's a good question. Why Shema is different? But it's just the minimal thing. Good question. I'm not going to get an answer. Yes?
If he can do it, or if he wants to.
He's always, no, he's putter. He's putter because he's always learning.
If he would want to move it anyway, if he would want it out.
Right. What?
If
he'd want to?
Yeah, if he wanted to. Or
the person that, well, that's like wants to be the Nasa Davin once a month. And then it means that he gauged himself that once a month he felt he needed the benefit of tefillah. Okay?
Well, the
thing is, you can't say, when you say want, it's very hard for us to know what the wants of a person on that level are not the same as our wants. You know what I mean? So it's hard to use that word, because the person like that, we can't really understand their mind. They're very high level. So they don't have wants like we have, you know. But I would put it this way. I would say that apparently Rabbi Nasi felt, even Rabbi Nasi felt that he needed the benefit of tefillah. Or the, I don't know what his chashbon was, but along those lines, the benefit of tefillah once a month. Okay, yes?
Is he allowed
to do what? That's a good question. That's a good question. My answer is the Gemara in Brachos says by David HaMelech that David HaMelech would say Tehillim at night time, and he said he asked God that the Tehillim should be just like Torah. It should be counted like Torah. So what does it mean? So what it means is that the Tehillim, when he said Tehillim, it means that he was involved in the appreciation of the perfection of being close to God. That's a certain kind of a state of mind. And it's a certain kind of a state of perfection. And that's really Sefer Tehillim. Sefer Tehillim, all Sefer Tehillim is, where David Melch expresses what it's like to be close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to have your total betochon in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it's a certain kind of human experience. So the Gemara says that David HaMelech asked God that that should be as good as Talmud Torah itself. So Chaim V'Loshna said that, you see, God didn't answer him. So he says that you can't be sure what the answer was. So he says a person should better learn than say Tehillim. But the fact is, you see that a person on a very high level has a right to make certain decisions, because David HaMelech did make that decision. But again, that's for people on that kind of a level. They know which decisions to make, whether they should daven or whether they should learn. But it's something which you have to be on that level, really, to know how to make that decision. We're not on that level. We're very, very far from that level. We can't do something like that. But the question is a legitimate one, but you see from David HaMelech that he had a right to make that decision. Okay? So a person on that level can make that decision. But I think that that we're not on that level. You have to go by what Chaim V'Loshna said. Let's sit and learn. Okay? Any other questions? Yes?
Regarding halacha, that the solution down on to the Torah is to follow it, would it be better to follow it? Is it supposed to be better to follow the Torah than before walking into the Dalai Lama?
You mean I'm mechuyev to go into the Dalai Lama?
No, if you're in the Dalai Lama.
In the Dalai Lama, sorry.
Follow it and walk out before.
Yeah, I would say so, because it's an opportunity for Kavanah Torah. I mean, unless the person is learning, so I would say if the person is learning, he's not mechuyev. It's a bigger Kavanah Torah to sit and learn. But if the person is not doing anything, certainly it's a bigger to give cover to the Torah is a schus. So it's something a person should look forward to do and should try to do, unless, like I said, unless they're learning. Talmud Torah itself is the biggest Kavanah Torah. But if you're not learning, so this is a great, it's an opportunity for a person to show Kavanah Torah. You should do it. I'm not saying you're mechuyev to do it. I'm saying if you're asking me, a person that's on a higher level and is looking and loves mitzvahs would do it. A person doesn't do it, you can't say they're doing an avera. Yeah. Not, they want mechuyev. But it certainly is an opportunity for a person to show Kavanah Torah. It's always if you do it less, I mean, what is he doing that's more important? So it's an opportunity. You should do it. But if a person doesn't do it, you can't say that they're doing something wrong. Okay? But there's something I will mention with regard to that, and that's something which I don't know why, but halachically, somehow or other, some halachas, it's like Rav Soloveitchik, Zichron Halachas, said that certain halachas have mazel, certain halachas don't have mazel. But one of the halachas is that by when you pick up, when they do hagbah, so you're supposed to really bend down when you see the ksav. And that's something which I don't know why, but for some reason it's been lost. But it's brought down by the Ramban on the Chumash, and it's brought down in the Shulchan Aruch. So that's something which is proper to do. And it's something which is often overlooked for some reason. I don't know why. That certainly, person, when they go hagbah, it's important to, you shouldn't just, you know, turn your back and, you know, not look at the Sefer Torah, because that's a real Kavanah Torah, to show that, it's actually saying, Brich Shmei D'mori Oma, you say, V'sogidno kamei, umikamei diikar oraise, v'chol idon idon. I bow down before the Kavanah Torah. So that's certainly something which is, a person should not view as optional. Okay? Yes? That's a good question, but I'll give you a basic answer. I mean, there's a whole really, this demands a shiur in itself on Hilchos Ksivas Sefer Torah and the whole idea of our Sefer Torah Bizman Hazeh. Are they really? Are we sure that they're really exact? I mean, all kinds of questions about that, which are brought down in halacha. But the basic question that I think you're asking.